Welcome. You're listening to the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast, live from the Fly Fishing Show in Marlboro, Massachusetts. Fly Fishing Journeys is proud to be broadcasting live from the event and having great conversations with many of the finest fly fishing and fly tying experts in the world. You can find these podcasts posted to our website, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Facebook. To stay up to date with these and other Fly Fishing Journeys adventures, please be sure to follow and subscribe. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Thank you, Josh. The name Jeff Currier is known world over. He's considered by many as one of the top fly fishermen and, more importantly, the top fly fishing ambassadors in the world. Jeff, I'm more than honored to host you on the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast. Thank you for being on our show.
My pleasure. This is going to be fun.
Many know, but for those that don't, let's give our listeners a brief look into your background. Jeff has fished 6 of the 7 continents, and today we're going to find out what's taking him so long to get to Antarctica.
My ice auger is not thick enough.
Yes. He's got more species of fish on a fly than, dare I say, any other human ever. And we're going to get an updated list. We're going to get an updated number today. In addition to his fly fishing journeys, he's a talented and acclaimed artist. He depicts the beautiful fish from around the world in various mediums and on many really cool canvases. My favorite being my morning coffee in my Jeff Currier mug. I have both the brook trout and the Arctic grayling. He's been featured on many of the films in the film festival, and he has written several books and produces several DVDs. And today, we're going to take a little trip around the world, Jeff. I'd like to have you have our listeners get an understanding of what it's like to fish in so many different places, in so many remote locations around the world. So first, I just want to, again, thank you for being on our podcast.
No, it's great to be here. Loving it.
So we're here in Marlboro, and you have this huge history of fishing so many different species in so many different locations. What is that exact number? How many fish are we up to?
Well, the exact number of fish that I know I've caught, I have their names and everything, is 397. That was a count from about maybe December 28th. I did that just before the end of the year for my own information. I can think of about another 5 fish that I don't know the names of that I've caught. So if somebody asks me, I say over 400. So about 410 would be my guess.
That's so cool. And you actually document these and they're on your website. People can go and look at the different regions and the species, and you have it broken down where a sunfish might have how many different subspecies.
That's right. So if somebody wanted to see what sunfish I've caught, and maybe somebody wants to help me catch another, that would be kind of cool. They just click on my website, fish species caught on fly, and then they go to North America and click, and all the freshwater species from North America are there. The other way I do it is for my saltwater, I just click on the ocean.
That's neat. That's really fun. So how did you start? I mean, let's go back to the beginning. What got you involved in fly fishing?
Well, a lot of people don't know, but I grew up, 30 miles from here in Topsfield, Massachusetts. And, trout fishing, let's just face it, trout fishing here in New England, especially back then, was not that great in Topsfield. We had the Ipswich River, which was actually better than most places. I had a lot of small brooks around my house. But until they stocked it, I had to catch something. So it was always chasing the sunfish or smallmouth or largemouth bass. And, of course, made trips out to Cranes Beach and Plum Island. And, at that age, I wasn't using a fly rod, but I was still getting familiar with all the cool fish that were around the area to catch. So that's how it probably had started, keeping track and learning new species.
That's unbelievable because we actually have the same exact beginning. I knew you had New Hampshire heritage, but I didn't know it was Topsfield, and I didn't know it was the Ipswich River because it was actually 2 trout that me and my brother caught when I came back from college in the Ipswich River in Middleton.
Oh, yeah.
That got me reinvigorated back into fishing. I always liked to fish as a kid, the bass, and we'd jump over the fence at BB Chemical, right not too far from you there in Topsfield, and we'd catch those monster bass. We'd dare to put them back because we didn't know what was in that water. But it was that heritage as a kid that I went off to college, and me and my brother, when we came back, we fished that Ipswich River there in Middleton, and we caught 2 nice rainbows. But just being with my brother and fishing kind of reinvigorated me back into fishing. And that's when I came to a fly fishing show quite like this. Met some group at TU. They taught me fly fishing 101, and off I went. So it's funny that we have the same exact background.
I didn't know that either. That's great.
That's so cool.
Well, it just tells me this is a great place to fly fish. It doesn't always have to be trout. You don't have to go out west to fly fish. There's good stuff wherever you live. It really is. start throwing in the warm water species, and if you live near salt, there's tons to do.
I don't know if you remember shooting this video, but I watched it one time online. And this is a few years back, and it's before we had the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast. And I had this passion to be more involved in fly fishing. And I watched a video that you shot somewhere on some remote location. You were somewhere on some dock. And you said people come up to you all the time and say, you know, how did you become a career fly fisherman? Like, what did you do? How did you get to the point you're at now? And you said, well, I just have a passion for fishing. I go fish, and I fish hard, and I fish a lot. And if somebody wanted to get involved and be more of a career fly fisherman, I'd say just go chase the fish. Go fishing and fish a lot and fish a lot of different places, and you don't know what could happen. I don't know if you remember shooting that video.
Oh, yeah, that was Turning Points North with R.A. Viotti. We were up in Canada catching big pike, and it was kind of a little, you know, one of those 12, 15-minute films about something, and they happened to choose my life. It's kind of cool that they did that, because honestly, even this morning, I answered an email. I don't know the person. I'm guessing it was like a 22-year-old or someone that follows me, maybe on Instagram or my blog, and they think there's a formula to do what I'm doing. Like, okay, the question was, hey, how do I go do what you're doing? And there's no like written out way to do it. Like you just said, and I said it in the movie, you fish hard, you share your knowledge with other people, the things you learn, and kind of get into the sport maybe a little deeper, make it a part of your business. So maybe you work in a fly shop, and then you work from the fly shop to, you know, teaching fly fishing, and then maybe you become a guide. I don't know. You know, it just happened to me, but that's how it went for me. And then I actually went beyond the guide and came back to the shop so I could work with people more often, you know, more bigger groups of people, and here I am. I mean, it's weird.
I'll tell you, that video had a huge impact on me because I watched that, and it kind of was another turning point for me to say, okay, I'm just going to go fish. I'm going to go fish hard, and, you know, ideas start happening, and next thing I know, I'm podcasting. But I'll tell you, that video, I can look as a turning point, as a marker for me to jump into the industry, if you will.
Cool. I'm glad to hear that, and I think it has been for other people as well. I think my last line in the movie is fish hard. If you fish hard, you fish well, you share your information, people will discover you. And then you never know what happens.
That's so cool. So there you were as a young man in Topsfield. And what happened next? Did you go off to college? Did you go off to school? I know you became kind of a traveling trout fisherman for a while. What was next for you as a young man?
Well, I left Massachusetts, New England before I was a man by a long shot. I was not really college material. My dad wanted me to go to college, so we made a deal that I could kind of pick a place where maybe I wouldn't have to take real hard classes and I could fish my brains out and still pass in 4 years. So I thought I was going to go out west. You know, I looked at some schools out in Montana and Colorado, and I wasn't real sure about it. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I got a catalog from Northland College in Ashland, Wisconsin, way up on Lake Superior. And I opened up the catalog. I remember my dad wasn't even home. It just came in the mail. And it said one of our students last year caught the world record tippet class brown trout walking distance from the college. And I was like, oh, that's where I'm going. Okay. Dad got home. I'm like, I made up my mind. He's like, what? Where?
I'm ready for college, Dad.
Yeah. I was like, I'm ready for college now. And then I had to get accepted. So I actually had to try a little harder in school that senior year, but I got accepted and I went there. And long story short, school was always hard. And I was hoping to be into wildlife management, but there's way too much calculus and algebra for that. By the time my 4 years was over, I'm a naturalist, which is great. Outdoor education and biology, and it's really helped me in my fly fishing. Just knowing where I'm at, what the fish are, what the birds are, what the animals, it's all important.
Mm-hmm. And then so after that point, where did you travel to next? I know you eventually landed in Idaho, but from Wisconsin, what was next for you?
Well, those 4 years in the Midwest were a mixture of Wisconsin and Minnesota. I did some internships and, you know, actually did some teaching with kids in Minnesota, but then I went straight to Wyoming. I got a job in a fly shop, you know, halfway through my senior year of college. Got the job in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And that would be my platform for the next 23 years. I worked there from 1987 till 2009. At first, I was there just to fish. You know, I'll take as few hours as you can give me next week, even if it's only like 10, because then I can at least pay my bills and I'm going to fish. And I did. And eventually, though, I worked my way up the ladder, taught classes on fly fishing, and then I did the guiding, and then I came back to the shop as the manager of the whole fishing operations, which I did for 20 years. And it was, like I say, a great platform. I met the right people. I was in the industry, and that just propelled it.
That's phenomenal. And tell the listeners about Jackson Hole.
Yeah, Jackson Hole is kind of the threshold for cutthroat fishing. It's some of the best fly fishing for beginners that there is, which really, that gave me the opportunity to help people learn to fly fish and help them get their fly fishing, you know, hobby started. And also, Jackson Hole is a famous place, so a lot of important people dropped through there over the 23 years I was there, whether they were in the industry or whether they were from other parts of the world. You know, a lot of times, you know, New Zealanders might come through the shop and I help them catch fish all week while they're there. And they say, hey, young man, if you're ever going to come to New Zealand, here's my card. Well, guess what? Courier's going to be there very soon.
You're going to take him up on that offer.
Yeah, I didn't miss many offers over the years. I mean, I'd say before I even left the shop, I had already fished in, you know, 30 countries because people just pass through there from everywhere, and I take advantage of it all the time.
That's awesome.
It made a lot of great international friends. That's the best part about it. Really fun.
And a beautiful place.
Oh, yeah. And good fishing. You know, it's home of the Snake River Cutthroat. You know, a lot of times at these shows, I'm doing my Trout Bumming the World seminars. And right in the beginning, I always put up a big, beautiful Snake River Cutthroat. And despite the fact that they're going to see in my show some, you know, 10-pound browns and big rainbows and rookies from Labrador, the Snake River Cutthroat is my bread and butter fish.
Yeah.
It's just spectacular.
That's so cool. And it gets people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you still get there much? I know you're in Idaho more now, but are you still connected to Jackson Hole at all?
Yeah, when I left the shop, there's my whole crew. I left them behind, and some of the kids that worked for me actually went on to buy the operation. So now I say kids, now they're all in their late 30s and 40s, and they're running a really good Grand Teton fly fishing. They're running a real good program. They just kept it going. The only thing that's missing really was the shop that I used to be at. That kind of faded away, became a clothing store, which Downtown Jackson real estate, that does happen.
It's going to happen, yeah. And so now you're in Idaho, Victor?
Yep. And I was there even the last 12, 15 years of working over in Jackson. That's, you know, if you're gonna work in Jackson and make a career out of it, and you started any time after like 1980, you probably can't afford to live there. So luckily, my wife Granny and I, we bought a house in Victor, Idaho in 1992. Now that's hard to afford to live in, and we did the pass for... Granny still does the pass every single day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty rough drive. There's a lot of traffic, and, you know, it's snowing here today, but when it snows in that pass, it's gnarly.
Sketchy, yeah. I did the pass, so the Monarch Pass coming from Crested Butte.
Oh, yeah.
Back to Denver. After the Denver show, we did a little skiing out in Crested Butte, and I did the pass. And, you know, the pass wasn't even the worst part because it was snowing over the pass. But actually, as I got closer to Denver, it really started to snow. And some of that up and down steep grade stuff can be a little gnarly in that weather.
Traffic and snow, too. Horrible.
Yeah. So traveling the world, why don't we go through the different continents? Because I know here in North America, what would you say would be an interesting story or an interesting fish here in North America that you could point our listeners to?
As far as traveling, I would say in freshwater, I would say pike and muskie, maybe muskies in Wisconsin, which is, I have a passion for that. You know, I feel like I have Wisconsin roots because that was, you know, a time in my life when I was really growing up, going from age 17 to 21. And I go back at least once a year. Last year I was back twice. Hopefully this year I get there twice. But there's a muskie fishing culture up there with a fly rod. And most people, they go to the Keys or they go bass fishing in Texas or they go red fishing, and they don't get up there, and they should, because that will trigger, like, wow, there's some more interesting things out there to do. And like I say, the culture is very cool.
Well, speaking of culture in Wisconsin from muskie fishing, Noam Stark is quite a muskie fisherman in and of herself.
She, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I saw the flies.
I was actually just going to talk to you about her, and she just walked by because we had a podcast yesterday, and she is an amazing muskie fisherman, and her specialty is those big flies for big muskies, and she has her roots in Michigan and Wisconsin.
I'm going to go talk to her. She's right across from me. I saw the flies. I was going to go over and ask her about them.
Yeah, and now she's here in Portland in New England, but that's phenomenal. It's interesting that you talk about that because we were just talking about the muskies of Wisconsin yesterday. So let's go down to Central America. What would you say is a little different or unique or that you could bring to the forefront in Central America?
Well, that's where my world travel stuff started. So let's go back in time, probably 1988, working in the shop. My boss, Scott Sanchez, he was my boss at the time. He's only a few years older and was really one of my best friends and still is. Anyway, Scott went to Belize in 1988. I stayed and watched the shop while the snow fell. I think it was probably February. I went ice fishing. He was chasing his first tarpon. All I remember when he came back from the shop, him and his buddy that went, the stories, the look on their face, the tans. I mean, I just started drooling. Yeah. And I had no way to do this because I owed money on a college loan. My car was a 76 Dodge Aspen falling apart. I'm like, man, I'm going to start trying to save some money. Well, that didn't go very good, but I did have the guts to do it. That next winter, I charged a trip to Belize on my account at the store.
Okay.
And they didn't know I did it. I actually got away with it.
Oh, my goodness.
And they can't fire you when you do that because they need to get that money back.
So, yes, so, they need you.
So I had to keep working. But anyway, it took a month. I went to Belize, but I started my trip with an actual guided trip. And then I hung out there for the next 3 weeks. And there's some great people in this world. There was rumors that there was some poor American trying to catch tarpon and this on flies running around with a backpack. And did I say some great people out there? Belize River Lodge, which was close to the airport, their owner, I met him like downtown Belize City, and he invited me over to the lodge to hang out for a week, chase tarpon with some of his young guides who didn't know how to do it. And then Craig Hayes and Karen, who are here with Turner Flats, Belize, they're right here at the show. They heard about me too, and they set me up to go out there for a week. It's just funny how things come together like that. And so I went from like not affording to leave the house and go to Belize, but I took a risk and threw some money down to all of a sudden, next thing you know, I was there for a month.
That's amazing.
With guides and having a good time. And that was the beginning because I loved it so much and I worked with these lodges. They said, why don't you bring some of your customers and you can come free next year. I did it I've been to Belize like 25 times since then. But that's how it started. Then I would finish my trips there in Belize, and then I would get on the bus and ride to Guatemala. Then the next year I went to El Salvador. And the next year I rode the whole Central American highway there from Belize all the way down to Panama. And once that started, it was just every 6 months, I just got on an airplane and went somewhere. Next was South America, then Asia, then Australia, then Africa, just still going.
So you love Belize?
Yeah, it's a great place. It's probably some of the best saltwater fly fishing you could have, a day's travel away.
So you speak of South America. Let's travel down to South America. I know you've done some film festival videos in different spots. But let's not necessarily even go to those spots. Where would you say would be a unique and kind of eccentric place in South America that you could tell our listeners about?
Oh, well, one of my favorite places I've ever been down there was Bolivia, but that's not something you can really wing on yourself. And I'm glad I never tried to do it. I did try to do some jungle stuff in the Amazon in Peru when I was young, and it didn't work out so good. Just hard doing wing it trips in the jungle, unless you have like 3 months and you can ride barges and stuff, which I did a little bit of that kind of stuff. But so Bolivia is my favorite place down there that I've ever been to. It was just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And then is there a specific lodge or a place that you like to talk about in Bolivia?
Yeah, Samami, the Untamed Angling Guys, which I should mention right now, nowadays I'm an advisor and an ambassador for Yellow Dog, work with those guys and have for many years. And so we booked that trip for Samami Lodge down in Bolivia. And it's nice when you work with Yellow Dog, you're actually working with a company that's in the U.S. and you're going to send the money to a company that's in the U.S. and they handle all the booking international
stuff. Yep.
But Samami Lodge, it's incredible. Golden Dorado and Paku. It's one of the prettiest places on earth. And that's saying a lot for a guy coming from Victor, Idaho.
What is a day like in Bolivia, in the jungle?
You wake up to some of the most gorgeous birds that you ever heard in your life. And then you walk out and grab a cup of coffee and stand on your balcony, you look around and you realize that you are 400 miles from the nearest road. It's not just a wild place, but in a sense, it's a little dangerous, which I love. I thrive on that. When you go out there, don't break a leg or don't do anything stupid. Don't get bit by a poisonous bee. It's just, I don't know. I look out and then I'm just like, man, today's going to be a wild and crazy day. And I might also catch a giant golden Dorado or a Paku today that's just going to blow my mind.
And then you have this amazing breakfast, your coffee, you think about your day, and then what is it like? You get on a canoe, you get in, what do they call these?
Yeah, those you get in kind of a motorized, long dugout canoe, and you'll go as far as you can. A lot of times you got to get out in the boat, pull the boat up a rapid, then you go up the next one. Then you may not be able to go any further, so you hike for a couple hours. And there are times when you're fishing something that maybe nobody's ever even been to. Just incredible. You hook a fish that has never seen a human. It's not often that happens anymore. We interact with fish all the time, but somewhere in the backcountry of Bolivia, you might have a fish that doesn't even know humans exist. And so when you get hooked, he's going to fight harder than he's ever fought in his life because he doesn't know what you are and he thinks you're going to kill him.
That's amazing.
It really is.
So I'm looking at these beautiful pictures you have here in Ungava Bay. You're Jeff Curry on the back of this banner over here, and you've got this beautiful fish holding this giant fish here. And some people think, you know, oh, wow, that's fun. That's easy. But you just mentioned you had a couple-hour hike and up over rapids. Some people don't realize how hard it is to get to some of these places.
Well, and here we are. I didn't even think about those guys being there. There's the other end of the spectrum. That's practically the North Pole right there. And that was one of the wildest places I've ever been as well.
Is that Kuujjuaq?
North of Kuujjuaq. So you fly into Kuujjuaq, and then you travel about another 120 miles by a twin otter up to their place. And fish Arctic char, sea run brook trout. I think we caught some cod and some giant sculpins. It was just a hoot. But when I got off that plane, which we got stranded in Kuujjuaq a couple days because of bad weather, even though it was July, there was some snow and sleet, and we couldn't fly. But we finally got in there. And Paul and Simon, who are giggling over there now, they're sitting there. They both had 308s over their shoulder. And they go, Courier, do not take one step past us. There's a polar bear around.
Oh, no.
And
so we're in Labrador now.
No, we're in Nunavik.
Nunavik. Okay, yeah, we're in Nunavik.
Northern Quebec. And long story short, it was one of the wildest weeks we had, and the fishing was unbelievable. I'm looking at that char. That was a miracle catch. It was not easy fishing, but I was standing on this point. It was too windy to go in the boats. And we were kind of working our way back in the boats. And I said, let me just go on that point and fish for a half hour. It just looked like a great drop-off in place. I was kind of just about to give up. And all of a sudden, I saw a char flash behind my fly. And I stayed there and worked for about 5 minutes later. I got the fish. And that was a big one, as you can see from that picture.
Fun fishing for char.
Yeah, it really was. And it was new to me. I mean, I caught a few char in Iceland over the years. And, you know, bumped into them in various places. But that was the first time I went on a char trip. It was special.
So we've been to America, Central America, South America. We bounce all the way up to Canada.
Yep, practically the North Pole.
Way north Canada.
Yep.
Let's go over to Europe. What type of travels and what type of experiences have you had in Europe?
Well, Europe was the kind of place where I said, I'll go there when I'm old with the wife and eat food and drink wine. And then all of a sudden, the World Championships of Fly Fishing, which there is, it's like an Olympic event. A lot of people don't even know about it. Especially at that time, it was 1996, was held in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. 32 countries from around the world came to Jackson Hole, Wyoming to compete on the Snake River. There was an American team, which I was like, who are these guys? It was basically, I would refer to it as a gentleman's team. You know, it was a bunch of old guys. There was no sponsorship, so they paid their entry fee and travel all themselves. And they had been doing it for a few years and doing very badly. If there were 32 teams, they usually got 30th or 31st place. Sure enough, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, they got 31st or 32nd place, and it actually irritated the heck out of guys like me. I was, you know, a young whippersnapper, 30. I'm like, I can win the gold medal, rah, rah, rah. And I had actually volunteered a lot of my time to help that thing run. It's funny, the guy that was one of the gentlemen on that team, Walter Ungerman, was also a customer of mine at the store. Super sweet guy. He said, you know what? We could have a good team if we could have young guys. You're still not going to win, by the way, he was telling me. He's like, the Euros are really good, and they are. Oh, man, they're good. But we just can't bring you on the team because you have to pay your own way. And I'm like, well, how much is that going to cost? He goes, well, next year it's in Poland. If you give me $5,000 right now, you're on the team. I'm like, that's not an option. I guess I'll never fish in Poland. Well, I got a call that winter from Walter. He goes, you know what? Some of the gentlemen on this team don't want to go to Poland next year. So I'm going to pay your way.
What?
And I want you to get your buddy Gary, who was one of my guides and also my best friend, that guided Walter many times. He goes, and tell Gary he's going too. You both are going to be on the team. If you do well, it'll be the beginning of making this a younger team. Maybe we can get sponsorship, and eventually things will start happening. So long story short, I fished in Poland that summer, and I got 11th place out of, you know, 160 anglers.
That's
world thing. Gary got 22nd, and that was the beginning. And I loved it. I loved fishing in Poland, got into European grayling fishing, and the whole, what we refer to now as either Euro nymphing or Czech nymphing, which was actually probably started by the Polish and by a certain individual, Vlady Shabunia, who I call him my European father. He's one of my best friends. And me and Vlady, I would just fly to Europe, fly into Poland. We hop in his car and drive all over Europe. And I competed in Europe for the next 5 or 6 years.
That's so amazing. I actually hear you're on the senior team now.
Yeah, I'll be arriving in South Africa exactly 2 weeks from today, almost to the minute. Yeah, we've got a competition. It's going to be February 11th through 16th. So I'm going over early to kind of get the show and fluorescent lights out of my body.
Yeah.
Do a little fishing, resting, and then the tournament starts on the 11th. It's going to be intense. It's three lakes and one river.
Well, I'm going to save the competition conversation for the next podcast, I hope, because we want to hit the rest of these continents. But I'm actually friends with Josh Miller.
Okay, yeah.
And we did a podcast with him at the symposium a few weeks back.
Yeah, so he's good. He ties a lot, quite a few flies for me. I'm not a big fly tire, so when I need stuff, I get a hold of Josh.
He's pretty good. So, all right, so we're in Europe. Now let's pop over to Asia. I know you've traveled quite a bit through Asia. You had like this wild period of your young adult life where you kind of just trout bummed around Asia.
Yeah, I did all kinds of stuff. I really wanted to see Mount Everest, and I wanted to kind of combine it with some fishing. And the fish over there is the golden mahseer. Actually, there's a whole bunch of mahseer species, but the golden and the silver are the two that, and the chocolate that we really think of on fly. Of course, at that time, nobody even knew there were different species if you were an American. It was just, I want to catch a mahseer. But my wife and I, we went and took 3 months off, got permission from our jobs, and were able to keep the jobs, and we flew to Kathmandu. I remember I had to go somewhere where I had Delta miles. And so we flew to Bangkok for free, and then I was actually able to use a partner airline, and we ended up in Kathmandu for nothing. And for 3 months, we just lived out of backpacks. First thing we did was we did the Everest Base Camp hike all by ourselves, unguided. Took us about 22 days, and I fished my entire way from the lowlands, probably from about elevation 8,000 feet all the way up to 18,000 feet over the next 2 weeks on foot. We walked the entire Everest trek and then came out a different way. And guess how many fish I caught? Zero.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, mahseer fishing is very difficult. I don't even know if they were in those rivers. I don't think they were. But I tried anyway. And then we ended up fishing the next 2 months throughout Nepal and India. And we caught some interesting fish. I never got a mahseer on fly. It was a tough trip. We rode the trains and local buses, and we lived like local people. And all I can tell you is that was 2002. India's changed a lot, but it's still tough. But back then, we were pretty beat up when it was over. And I actually rode off the golden mahseer as a fish I'm not even going to tackle on fly. I'm done over there because it was that hard a trip. However, I got a call or an email eventually down the road from a guy by the name of Misty Dillon, who hopefully I see this next week down in Edison. But he was an Indian that was a good fly fisherman, and he knew how to catch mahseer on fly, and he invited me back over. And I just remember going, I am not going back over. Well, after a year, I'm like, I'm going to go fish with Misty. And we've became great friends, and now I guess I've kind of become like the mahseer expert, really, because I went over with Misty, and we learned a lot of things together, and I've caught a lot of big mahseer on fly now.
I've seen some of the photos. They're gorgeous.
Been back to India 3 times since then. I worked on a project in Bhutan for the World Wildlife Fund, actually trying to save a river over there. That was incredible, and caught him in Nepal. It's just, I don't know how that happened, but that's what happened, and it's just incredible.
That's so cool. I actually have a good friend who lives in northern India myself, and I know we've talked about the mahseer, so that is high, high, high on my list. And you're making it sound a little trickier than I first anticipated, so I'm going to have to pick your brain a little bit deeper into that before I trek over to India. But
it's not as tricky anymore.
Okay.
I can help you out.
Uncover that a little bit.
You'll make it happen.
Awesome.
You know, the research has been done, as they say.
I love it.
It's fun to do that research, I'll tell you what, but I'm glad it's over.
Well, good. And so we've covered Europe. We've covered Asia. Well, we haven't covered it. We've touched on it.
We touched it.
Well, there's going to be more. Hopefully, this isn't our last chance to talk.
No, it won't.
Let's get down to Australia and New Zealand. What type of experiences have you had down there?
Well, I actually got to work for Tassie Tourism. It would have been about maybe 1995, 96. And I say work for him. What happened was Tassie Tourism happened to be, you know, some of the guys that worked for Tassie Tourism were in Jacksonville, Wyoming on a fishing trip. And they ended up fishing the Jacksonville One Fly the next year. Anyway, I get to know these guys. They were always inviting me over there. And I said, you know, I just can't get myself away from New Zealand. I was going through a New Zealand phase also. That was another one of my, you know, annual backpacking trips.
A phase. I love this, Jeff. Yeah. You have a New Zealand phase. Some people want to go to New Zealand. You have a whole phase.
No, I was just, you know, hopping on a plane, flying the direct Los Angeles to New Zealand flight, and then, you know, just living out of my backpack, hitchhiking around New Zealand. And I had a lot of friends, too, after a long, you know, short couple trips. But the Tassie guys were, in a sense, kind of aggravated with me because I'm like, I can't get past New Zealand. Why would I go to Australia? And they're like, okay, we're going to take you to Australia. Will that work for you? And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this does work. So And I even got to bring my wife, and we went down for Tassie Tourism. I shot photographs for him. I'm not a photographer, but I'm good enough that I can do a job like that. Of course, I spent a month in Tasmania and shot pictures for Tassie Tourism and fished all their lakes. They don't have a lot of rivers, and I wasn't a good lake fisherman at the time, so it was a great eye-opener. I had to learn how to fish lakes. I ended up going back the next year, of course, and on that trip, I started fishing regular Australia. So I was down in the southern part fishing the trout streams there, and I loved them. Small fish, but really beautiful, beautiful water. And then I would fish a tournament in Australia. The World Championships was up near Sydney. So I've been to Australia a few times, and I'm ready to go back. It's been a while. It's time.
We're going to close in Africa, because a lot of people don't think of fly fishing when they think of Africa.
That's the phase I'm in right now.
You're in the Africa phase?
Yeah.
I've been to South Africa, and I've been to Angola. But tell me about your phase of Africa and fly fishing.
Just like you said, a lot of people don't even think about fly fishing in Africa, or at least they didn't until the last 5 years. And I didn't even know how to approach it. I knew there were tigerfish there. That's their freshwater fish. It's their top game fish over there in freshwater, other than Nile perch. And I didn't know what to do, and I couldn't figure it out. So in 2005, Granny and I did another three-month trip. We took off October, November, and most of December, and we flew to Lusaka. That's where my Delta Miles got us to that time. Lusaka is in Zambia. It's only about 60 miles from the Zambezi River. We thought we were going to be riding the buses and trains. Well, the buses and train systems are so bad, it turned into a hitchhiking trip. So we hitchhiked. We did get on...
With Granny?
Yeah. We did get on the buses, and we made it to Namibia, and our trip really started there, and that was such an ordeal, buses. It ended up taking like 2 weeks to do that. Thank God we had 3 months. And the locals were like, why are you taking buses? That's just stupid. None of us take buses because they're so unreliable. Just walk out to the street, put your thumb out, and go for a ride and give the guy a little gas money.
Okay.
And that seemed so unrealistic to, like, okay, we're going to hitchhike across Africa. Right.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden we started doing it, and it was easy. So we hitchhiked from Namibia through Botswana, through Zimbabwe, Zambia, and our trip ended. We were hoping to get all the way to the coast and fish Mozambique Ocean, but believe it or not, 3 months wasn't long enough. And we ended our trip on Lake Malawi in Malawi. We were snorkeling and diving there. I say diving. We weren't using any gear or anything, but it was a great way to end
free
a 3 months. Because it was a hard trip also. You know, it's not easy, these trips. It sounds like a vacation. Yeah. It's not.
Right.
It was awesome. And during those 3 months, I learned a heck of a lot about tigerfish. I learned about the bream. In a sense, as far as an American goes, I was kind of an expert. You know, because that's all I did for 3 months over there. And when I came back here, that's when people started asking me about Africa. And I got up, lodges over there invited me back over to, do things.
Right.
And I did the movie Connect. A lot of people saw Connect, which came out in 2010, and we filmed in Tanzania. And now people know about Africa. It was that movie that put it on the map.
That's amazing.
And in fact, I'm so excited. I mean, not only am I going to do the World Championships in South Africa in a couple weeks, but February 27th, I go back and I'm going to Cameroon for a kind of a new destination.
Fishing for?
Nile perch. Three new species of tigerfish and a new species of yellowfish.
Not on your list yet?
Not on the list yet.
Adding to the list.
Nile perch are. I have a lot of Nile perch experience in Egypt and Sudan, but this will be a new place to fish for them.
Well, we are going to stay tuned because we want to know more about Africa and adding to the list. Maybe our next podcast will be the new additions to the list.
Sure. Hopefully there's some interesting looking tigers.
Want to close, but I do want to touch on your artwork here real briefly. I know you're an incredible artist. You do these awesome, so all these fish we're talking about, you then document through beautiful colors on canvases, and then you put them on these different mediums like mugs or shirts or frosty glasses. Can you talk a little bit about your artwork, Jeff?
Yeah, so I was an artist my whole life, and I didn't know it. When I was a kid, I drew a lot. When I became an adult working, and I didn't spend a lot of time on my art, but I wrote my books. A lot of people don't know I wrote a saltwater fly fishing book and a warm water fly fishing book. But anyway, I did illustrations for those books. My first book was the saltwater. When I turned in that manuscript with my illustrations, I had actually pretty low hopes. I didn't think that they would accept it. But they came back to me very quickly and said, we love the book. The illustrations are okay. We really want to do this book in color. Can you do that? Or could you hire somebody? Well, hiring wasn't an option. Color was something I'd never done, so I went out and bought a set of watercolor paints and went to work. And I spent 4 months just literally locked myself in a room and painted. And at the end of that season, I had a book. I had done all my illustrations that I originally did in black and white and color. And, you know, all of a sudden people were looking at my paintings like, you should sell these. And that's how it happened. I actually put some stuff in the gallery there at our fly shop, and they sold. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm an artist. And started building up the collection of species.
And you currently have how many different fish on a mug?
68.
68? Yeah. Well, I have two. So yeah. I have a little work to do to get to the rest.
I don't know if anybody has the whole collection other than me, but it would be cool.
I want to try. I've actually brought some to our camp. We have a camp up in Quebec. We put a dozen up there. And then I went to this other camp up in the Northwest Territory. See, I'm starting to branch out a little bit.
Good man.
A young Jeff Currier here. I brought a six-pack or a dozen. I forget how many I got, but I brought some up there as a welcome gift. I mean, if you're ever going to go somewhere, what a great welcome gift would be a Jeff Currier mug.
Absolutely. My slogan is gifts for the fisherman that has everything.
Yeah, they're just beautiful, too. And then to enjoy it, you know, I've got a bunch of different mugs on my mug rack that I can have in my morning, and I always go to one of my two Jeff Curriers, and hopefully they're not in the dishwasher. So maybe I got to get a couple more, so I don't have to worry about that. But what I'm excited about is the Fly Fishing Journeys logo is going to be on a Jeff Currier mug. We're going to partner with you on that and then sell them on our website.
Yeah, that's going to be great. They're going to look very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Well, Jeff, you are Fly Fishing Journeys. You are the essence of our theme, the journey of the fly fisherman.
Cool.
So I'm loving that. And so why don't I give our listeners your website? It's jeffcurrier.com.
That's right.
You want to spell that for our listeners?
Yep. It's JeffCurrier.
.com. And there you have an incredible blog. You have a huge history there. All your trips that you've done, all the different species of fish that you've caught on a fly. A ton of blogs, beautiful pictures.
Yep, and that blog is always current. So it's not like you go back March 14th of 2012 was last entry.
Yep.
You will be able to follow me every day by day through the World Championships a few weeks from now. And that Cameroon trip, you'll be able to follow the day-by-day accounts. Usually I can't post when I'm on the road, you know, in Cameroon especially, but I'll put them up day by day as soon as I get back to civilization.
And you've got the blog, you have the fly species, and then you also have the shop. People can buy your mugs.
It's on the website.
Yeah, you have the shop. And people can find you at all the shows. And if you can't connect with Jeff at a show, you can certainly buy his mugs and his shirts and his different cool fish photos and fish wares right on the shop.
That's right. And you can also contact me. I have a contact button on my website. You just contact Jeff and send your message. You know, maybe you got a fishing question or something, or maybe you're thinking of going on a trip, or maybe you want to go on a trip with me. I host trips with Yellow Dog this year. I have 4 spots left for a Seychelles trip. But don't be afraid to use that button. Sometimes it takes a little time for me to get back to you, but I do.
And I appreciate that because you always have with me, Jeff. I appreciate your time. I know you have a busy show here. I will let you get back to Granny in your booth because I'm sure you have a ton of people who want to buy your stuff and your mugs. But it's been an honor to have you on our Fly Fishing Journeys podcast. I hope it's not our last because we've just really touched the surface. There's so much there to unpack. But I appreciate your time and thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you. We'll see you later.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher and follow us on Facebook. And please like and share our podcast with your friends. For past episodes or to read our journal blog posts, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you are on this journey with us.